Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I got a speeding ticket in the mail yesterday.
In the mail?
Yeah. I think I'm going to just ignore it.
It's Mike Shope.
Where was this?
Spain.
And the Bulldog.
I think if I just lay low, I think I'll get away with it.
Not mention it on the air?
Definitely don't want to talk about it on the air.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I like the sound of this more and more as we go. I'm an outlaw.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
No change to that one?
No.
To this point?
No, it's been
over a year.
Many months since I've received any correspondence from the authorities on the matter.
You probably could just claim that you couldn't read it. Or do they send that in English to a person in the United States?
It was in English, yeah. I don't have any plausible deniability on that front.
That's out there.
I still have the two notices. First one showed up 3 or 4 months after we'd been there, and then 3 or 4 months after that, a follow-up, and nothing since.
Sigmund Bloom, any experience with traffic violations from other continents, and then how to proceed?
Not other continents, although sometimes Ohio seems like another continent.
My story is getting a speeding ticket in North Carolina when I was in my early 20s and getting advice from friends, don't worry about it, it's a different state. And then eventually going to renew my license and being told it had been suspended for a long time. And I didn't even know it. That's what you get for not opening the mail, right? Sigmund Bloom would never be so casual. He is from footballguys.com and joins us now on the West Her Hotline. I want to apologize for roping you in here, where you just sort of, you know, politely reached out to me with a couple of Bills thoughts. And, of course, what do I have to do? I have to tie you up for 20 minutes.
Oh, I always look forward to this. I always look forward to spending time with my friends and spending time with the good people of Buffalo.
Good. Well, that's nice of you to say. Dalton Kincaid was one of your questions. You know, what are the vibes? Is there a chance, especially maybe with Shakir out for a little bit, that Kincaid can pop? He gets hurt again today, Sigmund, after your question. I don't know how serious, but he stopped practicing after taking a hit. Is it fair to say it's becoming much of the story, at least, with Kincaid? If it's not connected and it's not worth sort of making a big conclusion about. We're often, though, talking about his durability. The offseason came, and the Bills GM talked about strength being a priority for Kincaid in the offseason. I also don't know if what's happened here so far this summer is any sort of sign of concern on that front. So what are you doing?
Yeah, I think the pattern is clear that we may never see, at least Kyle Pitts in his rookie year showed us something that maybe implied a bigger career was coming, but Dalton Kincaid really hasn't had even a signature moment yet. And it's not just staying healthy. I think it is when he has been healthy or as healthy as he's been, he hasn't influenced the game the way a first rounder would. You know, he's looking like roughly like a Hayden Hurst in terms of first round tight end impact. And he's going to go down for being the player that the Ravens took ahead of Lamar Jackson. And I think you're right. With Khalil Shakir hurt, that's the moment that Kincaid, I think, is supposed to show how wise the Bills were for taking him in the first round, really as a pure receiving tight end. And it just hasn't materialized. And the question I showed up to ask you about today, Mike, was, you know, we're starting to feel a little pessimistic when we look at all the injuries piling up. And maybe a reversion to the Bills passing game that can be kind of frustrating at times, at least to begin the season.
I'm not really there. I have a theory about this, that because teams are so careful with players, and this could include Kincaid, that they're sitting down for not very much. And I think the way, for one example, Sean McDermott has talked about Khalil Shakir and even Joe Brady doing so, sounds like they're not really worried about him. Max Harrison at corner, I think, is a different deal. But I think there might be – we've had so many examples, Sigmund, already this summer of guys – you know, it's not just the cart that we all make fun of now. But just, you know, something happens, they leave practice, and then teams are a little bit cautious, but they prove to be okay. So I don't know that the Bills have an epidemic here, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I do think, though, there is more fire than just smoke to the idea that – you know, they're looking at their receivers past the third or fourth receiver. And I know Joe Buscaglia just ran a piece saying, hey, Curtis Samuel's on the roster bubble, even though he's guaranteed almost $7 million. And it sounds like Elijah Moore can be a useful piece, but not necessarily an impact piece. And we know how much Josh Allen relies on Khalil Shakir. So I think it only potentially becomes a problem if Shakir aggravates that ankle injury when he gets back on the field, or we see that he's playing, but he's playing through it. And that might become a problem more on third downs. But then maybe we'll just get back to Josh Allen hero ball, which is at least entertaining.
Right. My read here, for what it's worth, I don't have to be correct about this, is similar to Mike. I think they're just being very careful with Shakir. At this point, Sigmund, it would stun me if we heard at some point over the next few weeks that he's in doubt at all for the opener. So I don't think there's anything to be worried about there. That's a guy that's a very known commodity. I don't think anyone can use, of course, reps and practice and whatever, but they know who he is and what he is. His chemistry with Allen is undeniable. So it's not like that's a guy. He's in a very different boat than, say, a guy like Curtis Samuel, who has not had a lot of time in practice here in the summers anyway, the 2 years he's been here. And last year an injury sort of, I don't know, took him out of the front three-fourths of the season, basically. He was somewhat productive at the end. So, I hear the Vikings are looking to trade for a receiver, or the Jets, and I just think, what do I have to give you in addition to Samuel to get you to take the contract? Because there's big savings there for the Bills if they could find a partner.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe the real headline here is just how important Shakir is and how they're putting him in bubble wrap, because as he's progressing as a player in that, with that chemistry and that relationship, and there's some actionable fantasy football advice here, that you buy the dip, and if he hadn't had that ankle injury, maybe we'd be buzzing about how he's going to take a step up to an Amon-Ra St. Brown kind of level this year.
Shakir on Underdog ADP is pick 83, so end of 7. Keon Coleman less than a round later at 91. Bulldog, for one, is in on Coleman, and the Kincaid bullish argument for Kincaid applies to Coleman almost identically.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, could you talk yourself into him?
Yeah, I think that was the plan, right? I mean, we've heard from multiple sources now that was the plan. It was that Keon Coleman could turn into a big slot and not just do damage as a contested catch guy or someone on the boundary, but do damage after the catch and really learn the big slot position. So that he then becomes the guy that if Shakir is eased in, or Shakir has some sort of setback with his ankle, that he's in the crosshairs as a guy that the offense is really going to rely on, and he could show in year two that he's ready for that.
Yeah, a lot of the buzz around the team this summer, to my eyes and ears, has read like they're, I don't want to say they're banking on Coleman, but that there's progress, right? That his route running has improved. The coordinator used the same phrasing that our Sal Capaccio, our beat guy, used, I don't know, 3 weeks ago when I asked him, what looks different about Coleman year one to year two? And Sal used the word intentional. Like he's working more on setting up what he's doing with his feet and his hands and that sort of stuff. And Joe Brady today used that same phrasing talking about Coleman. So, and furthermore, the quarterback this week, Josh Allen, talked about Coleman. And of course, he's raving about him, and everyone's raving about everyone on every team this time of the year. But within that, did say we're going to be asking him to work inside and outside, which they've also said about Shakir off of the year he had last year. And so if there's a little more interchangeability there, maybe that's something that can spring Coleman, provided they can trust, they're not wasting Shakir if he lines up outside.
Yeah, I think just real briefly, I think with Bobby Peters, there's a lot of really good football theoreticians and people that are really looking at the big picture. And, there's some talk that you're going to see more formations where receivers are spread out and not truly in a cluster. I mean, in a cluster, but not truly in a bunch formation. And then you won't really have to buy space for receivers, and everybody will have that kind of inside-outside versatility, because defenses can't pattern match it for zone, and you can easily run rub routes for man coverage. So that kind of sounds like what the Bills have the personnel to pull off if they want to do it.
So a year ago, I probably would have said the same thing. Drafting Josh Allen in fantasy as like quarterback one, which is where he ranks – all right, somebody has to go with him, especially if he's going to contend for an MVP award, which he'd done in previous years. What happens? He wins, but yeah, nobody really goes with him. It's James Cook, Sigmund, and his 18 total touchdowns in the regular season. Can you see anything close to that happening again? The question you asked on Cook, I think, is a common one, which is, does his new contract mean he'll be used more? He'll have a more central, important role, more than 47% of the snaps. I tend to think not, but I don't know.
I don't know if he'll be used more by design, but I do think that he's a signature core player in this offense, and he's a player that I could easily see Josh Allen relying on, and maybe part of the answer of if they don't, if you continue to have injury problems with Kincaid, if this offense lacks that dimension, the vertical dimension that they hope that Curtis Samuel might provide, that James Cook could just be one of those guys that keeps the chains moving and ends up being used more than they designed because he's just really good. I mean, it's what gave them the confidence to sign him to the extension in the first place.
With Sigmund Bloom here on the Wester Hotline, footballguys.com. You can watch Sigmund on various podcasts, including his very popular series, On the Couch, which I've been honored to take part in once before. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. What in terms of Allen and fantasy drafts, round three, Lamar Jackson's right there, Daniels Hurts to follow into round four. Do you like drafting, say, more than the average amount of those guys and building teams around them, or would you rather wait?
I like Hurts this year. I think that one of the hacks in fantasy football this year, and you're seeing a little bit of it, Saquon Barkley was the clear number one running back, and Bijan Robinson's going ahead of him. I don't think the Eagles are going to have everything line up perfectly. The stat I keep coming back to is I think it was something like 53 pass attempts trailing in the second half. And I just think you're not going to see everything line up. You're going to see more passing volume. I think that Jalen Hurts also, there were times he was missing Devontae Smith. He was missing A.J. Brown, although watch A.J. Brown in this hamstring situation. But I think you're going to see a more balanced offense under Kevin Petullo, the new offensive coordinator with Kellen Moore down here. So I think if you're going to take a quarterback early, I like waiting on Jalen Hurts or just taking Lamar Jackson because of the Ravens line was young and really put together on the fly in camp last year how it was going to work out. Now they can gel. You add DeAndre Hopkins. Couldn't you see DeAndre Hopkins changing the outcome of a few games last year? Maybe a few games that Bills fans watched. I think this is a game – a situation where the Ravens offense could also take a step forward from an already high perch.
While we're on AFC contending teams, what are you inclined to do with the Chiefs this year? It's been talked about a lot and written about a lot that their offense has not been what it had been earlier in Mahomes' career. The part of me that's winning right now, the argument I'm having about the Chiefs is that I sense like a 5,000-yard, 40-touchdown season incoming from Mahomes and Andy Reid. What do you think about the Chiefs?
The key player in this conversation, I think, is Josh Simmons, their first-round pick. And, he was – a lot of people thought this was a pretty good offensive tackle draft. But some thought that he was the best in the draft, but he had, I believe, a torn patellar tendon last year at Ohio State. Well, he shows up ready to play in training camp, and it sounds like he's on track to start week one. And the last we saw the Chiefs spectacularly imploding, it was because of the offensive line. So you add a left tackle who can stabilize this line right away. And I think Juwan Taylor, the right tackle, was playing through injuries. He has said a lot worse than they let on last year. So if that is firmed up, another thing that makes me excited about this offense is that Jalen Royals, their fourth-round pick, it sounds like could be the rare player that Andy Reid trusts as a rookie and gives them some redundancy, because that's the other thing we saw last year was this, the offensive wide receiver depth chart fell apart for them. Then they lost a lot of dimensions in that passing game. So I'm definitely open to that, and I think that this is an offense – on the other side of it, we've been expecting this for a while, and they don't necessarily need to win games 33-30 with the defense they have. So we might just have Lucy pull the football away again.
It's possible that I'm not recalling this correctly, but it felt like around the draft, like the day after the first round, we're in here doing our show, and it felt like the Chiefs were playing the long game. Like that Simmons, mm-hmm. It was not expected that he'd be ready for the start of camp even, and therefore the beginning of the season might be in doubt. Maybe he can help them by the bye or that kind of stuff. And right from the start, OTAs, like he's there and he's 100%, and that just has not changed. So I don't know if they knew something that the people talking about the draft when it was happening didn't know, or if they just got lucky. But either way, I think it's a huge development for them.
Yeah. We don't need the Chiefs getting lucky. We don't need that anymore.
No, that's right. Never happened.
Right.
Certainly has never happened. Sigmund, one of the more exciting, fun aspects of fantasy drafts as we get near the season is, of course, the rookies, and it was such a rich year for running backs. I'm seeing, they're getting enough hype or even making plays in terms of Travion Henderson. I'm thinking R.J. Harvey as well. Of course, Bill Krosky Merritt in Washington. Like this is somewhat common, but maybe there's a little bit more of it than usual, where you're seeing the rookie hype. Famously Bulldog on Monday night in the main event. A few friends and I took Henderson at 3:03. Many are still buzzing about that. How are you playing these rookies?
Yeah, I think you have to be in on at least a few. You might differ in which ones, but you had some really good intersections of talent and a situation, and some of these already look like they're bearing fruit. Krosky Merritt, you mentioned, Brian Robinson, almost certainly not going to be with Washington. I'll mention Kyle Manungai, who from all outward indications has passed Roschon Johnson, and we've already heard Ben Johnson say, we're going to be able to trust this guy this fall. That's big for a seventh-round rookie. We've already seen Rashard Smith. I think it's clear he's going to make the team. Sounds like Eliza Mitchell has not done enough to prove that he deserves a spot on the team. And then how quickly does Rashard Smith maybe move into that Jerick McKinnon role? He has a very similar skill set to McKinnon, and it maybe ends up being like McKinnon was, like more valuable than the early down running back in Isaiah Pacheco, if Isaiah Pacheco can stay healthy. So these seventh round running backs are on the scene and ready to make an impact this year. We're going to watch Woody Marks in Houston. Maybe he's kind of the none of the above answer with the aging and disappointing running backs that they have. And then as the season goes on, I'm sure they're going to be more named. So that is absolutely something that should be part of your plan, at least one or two rookie running backs near the end of your draft.
And Football Guys is invaluable at sort of tracking all this on a day-to-day basis. One of the first things I remember learning from you is the concept of rational coaching. And like Woody Marks with Houston, it didn't. They drafted him, and they even traded up. They traded a future pick to get him. So you're considering a few things here. You're considering like what the team has at stake, and a lot of analysts have their own player takes, like watching these guys in college and thinking good or bad of them. But it's really more important what the team thinks. And here's a player that was not everybody's favorite prospect, Marks. He's got a fun story with going as Woody from Toy Story for Halloween 7 years in a row and adopting the name. But, whether you think a person thinks he's a good player or not can almost be secondary to what the team might be incentivized to do.
And what the fit is, too, because that's the thing about a player like Kyle Manungai is not an impressive player in terms of long speed or foam booth quicks. But like Jamal Williams, who Ben Johnson had success with, in Detroit, and also they had him in for a visit this summer in Chicago. He's just assignment sound and hard-nosed and no-nonsense runner. I think that you're going to see the Bears want to have a very diverse run game, and I think that he's going to be better than DeAndre Swift on zone runs. I think you're going to see him have a fit. So, you know, where Mongai on a different team, you know, maybe would be on the roster bubble. I think he has exactly what Ben Johnson likes. And I think there are other rookies, you know, Jordan James is interesting with the broken finger. I know Isaac Rendo's back in practice, but if Christian McCaffrey goes down, he's another one that's just super solid. And Kyle Shanahan loves running backs that understand how to run in his system. I think Jordan James we might be hearing about during the season in San Francisco.
Like it. Broken finger, is it, early in camp here, but maybe not out for too long. You have a favorite before you go, Subin, quickly? You have a favorite first-round pick?
Oh, man. I'll tell you this. Christian McCaffrey, I want to talk myself out of taking him, and I'm finding myself feeling strangely serene about the summer that he's had and having trouble coming up with a reason that he won't be back to the player he was. He's actually looked like that player now in those training camp clips, and it's the kind of pick that I think that either he makes your season as the pick at 5 or 6 or 7, or you have a fun challenge and you rouse the troops and you say, we're going to overcome this if McCaffrey goes down again. And again, just remember the name Jordan James.
Thank you, Sigmund. Great to talk to you as always. Enjoy the season. I know you will.
Always look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Footballguys.com. They have a – I wanted to say this with Sigmund on the line, and he's gone, but they have so many good writers.
Good job.
I know, right? I had one job, and that was it. I didn't do it. One guy I'm really high on is a guy named Dan Hendry, who writes really smart stuff, but also I know is a player. Like the guys who are also players. You know, a lot of us do the talking, but skin in the game, and he's won big. So he's one of, I think, their finest at Football Guys. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. What have we been into today? Some familiar topics. Curtis Samuel. We've talked about James Cook so much, not in the last couple of days, but the question about his usage given the contract is an interesting conversation. Like, does that change? And how the Bills sort of approach that. We'll talk about that as well. Sal will join us at 5. Lines are open for your calls here on WGR.
He's an explosive talent, and like anything, you start overusing them, they're going to get wear and tear, and all of a sudden, you don't see the same explosive player. So it's us utilizing that. James is a guy that we do think can be a three-down player. It doesn't mean everything's perfect. There's some little things that he's already been working on and will continue to work on, but we're excited with where he's at, and he's still a young talent. And as we've said in here, don't think he's been overtaxed or a guy that, like, man, the tread on his tires is getting worn by any means.
Bills GM Brandon Bean, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. So, what is your guess to the question of whether this new contract for James Cook means more time on the field? Should it? Will it? I keep going back to, without ever hardly thinking about contract stuff, what the Bills have been of late as an offense has worked really well, and that includes Cook being off the field for more than half their plays. So why would they change it? They might think they need more from him at what will be his new pay rate, even though this year he went up, but his contract isn't until after. Would you expect the Bills to play him more often?
I would say no. I mean, could it go from, what was it, around 47% last year? Could it, you know, just situationally, you know, maybe they're in tighter games and he's, you know, what to 52%, maybe 55%? I don't think it's going to be significant. I just don't think they would have invested in Ty Johnson. It's modest, but still, like, if he were someone that you were thinking you weren't going to use in the same role, or maybe even maybe a little bit more often, who knows? Then I don't think you commit to him the way they did. And I think you want to be careful to not use him. It's great that he doesn't have worn tires, to use Bean's metaphor there. Going back to college, even now into 3 years into the NFL, he's got a low amount of carries and touches for someone who plays running back. That's good. I wouldn't want to change that now that I've paid him. If anything, I want to make sure I protect that so that I can get, you know, it's a four-year deal, really ostensibly three for 30. I can get four more seasons out of him using him the way I'm using him and max that out rather than for a guy who's not a big, thick, bruising guy, more of a finesse-type runner. I think I want to keep using him the same way. I think you pay him to keep using him like you're using him. I think it would be very bad process to go, well, we paid him, so now we got to use him 69 or 70% of the time or something. Their offense worked extremely well with the guys in the roles that they had. And provided that Ray Davis still proves to be a dependable, you know, backup running back to spell Cook on, you know, just any down, not, you know, like Johnson has a very specific role. You know, Davis is more just Cook is tired, you know, or just let's get you one every fourth series. We're going to get you out there, that kind of thing. Provided you feel like you can depend on Davis to keep doing that, that there isn't some huge drop off, or you're just not getting, you know, every time he's out there, you're in second and nine if you hand it to him or something, which I don't foresee. I don't think there's any reason to change Cook's usage. It's tempting. I think it's a reasonable question to ask. You know, fans have been the whole time we've been debating whether to pay him or not. And then since they paid him, you know, there's always somebody ready to tell you what a crime against football it was that he wasn't on the field at the end of the Chiefs game. And, you know, that really tells me you're predisposed to wanting to use him more. Now they've paid him, so you're going to want to use him more. And I just would say, like, just be careful about that. What I want them to do, what I think they'll do, is what I'm suggesting. And it's one of these situations where I think it lines up. Like what I would do and what I think they'll do, I really am confident are the same thing.
That's a theme today.
I guess so.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's how we are as people, right? We sort of expect a certain thing, or you said it better than I am, want a certain thing, and then something comes along that makes you think that'll be confirmed. Confirmation bias. A little bit different from what you're saying, but still. Yeah. That's also for me, you know, just what you can get into trouble. I'm not saying there has to be a massive change, but just a minor one. You can get into trouble trying to build your thing, your machine, based on those kind of incentives. We have to play this guy. We drafted him in the first round. Now we're paying him $8 million a year versus two, whatever those things can be. And I think optimally, your team does not care about that. But in real life, yep, maybe you do.
I mean, I have no argument for anyone who wants to call us and tell us he's their best running back and maybe their most proven, dependable offensive weapon outside of Allen. Yes, you're absolutely right. But to keep it, to optimize it, to make it keep working, I think, although the temptation, you know, it's pro sports, get the best guys out there, what are you doing? Like, I get that. I just think he's someone who's been successful being used this way, and that doesn't mean that it's proven that he can't be used more and still be effective, but I just think there's a balance there, and I think you run a risk of messing with a good thing if yep. you do it. Do it that way. So I just would not. I would not want to. And like I said, I mean, the game situations may vary. I think you've alluded to this. You know, if they're in different kinds of games, you know, obviously if they're way ahead, then you know, your number two running back or number three running back should probably be carrying the ball on those run out the clock type drives in the fourth quarter. But if those games are tight, then maybe his usage can tick up a bit. But I wouldn't expect it to be significant. You know, I don't think it's going to go from 47 to like 67 or something. I don't think that's in the cards. I don't think it would be smart. And I happen to think that the Bills are smart. Like, I don't agree with every choice they make, see receiver, but I think they have their heads on straight about things like this usage and what works. And if it ain't broke and that kind of thing, And their backfield and their offense in general, really, is far from broken. But especially how they use their running backs. Johnson excelled in his role. Davis had a nice rookie season for a point of entry. And Cook scored 16 rushing touchdowns. Why do I want to risk anything by changing that? I think it's really a perfect setup.
Something has to change to them first, I would say, too. 22 running backs last year had more than 200 carries. Among them, Cook comes in last in snap share, 44.6. That 47, I hear 47, does that include the playoffs or why?
I don't know, but I've heard 44 and 47, and I don't want to be accused of slanting it by using the lower number, so I default to the higher number, but I'm not sure which one is 100%
there accurate. Might be a nuance here I'm missing, but yeah. According to Stathead, 44.6 was his number last year. That ranks last of 22 running backs that carried more than 200 times. He was at 207. Right above him is Bucky Irving, who went for 1,100 yards and 5.5 yards per carry for Tampa at 45%. At the top is Kyren Williams of the Rams at 81.5%. Bijan, Barkley are 2 and 3.
Wow, I wonder where those numbers, because the number I've heard on Kyren Williams when he signed his contract was 87%. And this is 81, so maybe it is playoffs.
Offensive snap percentage is what I've got. Maybe there's. I'll look to see if there's a different slant to that. Here's Sal with us. Hello, Sal. Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling us.
Good. I kind of had a twofold question for you. Number one, in the wide receiver, how many we're going to keep? You think any of those guys have special teams swag that'll get them in, that can get them above a guy they may be better than?
I think the
go
ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
My other question would have been just hearing the James Cook thing. I always fear guys that after they sign that big contract, I always think in a perfect world, you get 11 guys that are all in their last year of their contract and you're going to get the best out of them.
Well, I want to give most of these guys, if not all of them, more respect than that. I think, you know, Josh Allen made a monster deal and did any one person question his motivation or incentive after doing that? I think that is insulting to players that like they won't give me their best if they've been paid, you know, in advance, if you will.
Yeah. On the receiver question as it pertains to special teams, Shavers has started being used on some punt coverage, but it's been pretty minimal. It's not like he's heavy in the rotation there. Beyond that, it's mostly depth guys. I think the name for this now, as we get this far into camp and cutdown day is now less than a week away, right next Tuesday is that day. I feel like Chenault is the guy for this. My understanding is he's been working on the coverage units. You're seeing him return kicks, of course, which he's done in college and in the NFL, and the Bills have even been giving him a spin at punt returner, which I think is notable because they had an excellent punt and kick returner in Codrington last year who really just cannot be on the field as a defender. Like, it's just not – it's not any place you want to be. And if they think Chenault can handle both return jobs – and be something on offense, which, you know, it's going to be he's a depth guy, but it's a way to make sure you get him a uniform and maybe you can use him on some different things. He's got more of a bigger body than they have outside of Coleman, really. I feel like Chenault is the guy I'd be looking toward. Like, when I'm thinking about finding a way to divest myself of Curtis Samuel, it's not to say like Chenault replaces Samuel, because I think everyone would just move up one notch. Samuel might be 4 on the depth chart, followed by Moore and then Shavers. I think those guys all would bump up one. Chenault becomes your 6th guy, but he's getting a uniform because he's a core special teams guy. I don't think they have another guy that is being utilized that's realistic to make the roster. I mean, KJ Hamler also has return ability. I don't know that he's making your team at this point. I feel like Chenault, they're giving that a look, and I think it's probably there's intent behind it.
Do you think he looks good?
I think he looks all right. I mean, I don't know. I didn't. Yeah, I think he looks
okay.
Fine is the best I can do.
Fine at best, I was going to say.
Yeah, I don't know. But
I'm not watching Hard Knocks, though, and you are.
I think I didn't really see him on Hard Knocks at all.
No?
Handler's been a star on Hard Knocks.
Really?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
He had the little scooter. There was
I love a scooter.
He had a little scooter, like a little kid scooter, and there's a big personality there. He was featured again last night. In some like team building exercise they did with a game that they had a guy come in and play with everybody, and Hamler was central in that. Anyway,
was it interesting?
It was maybe the most interesting thing about the show. The show is, I think the show is on borrowed time. Like I don't know what the numbers will be. I know Bills fans are loving it. I'm enjoying watching it, but it's not anything like Hard Knocks was known for being. Anymore. It's a team movie.
The shark has been jumped.
Yeah.
With Hard
So
Knocks.
I don't know if viewership is still up, they'll keep making it, I think. But if the numbers take a hit, like I would expect objective football fans, I'm not seeing any like reviews outside of Bills fans going, I love it because Deion Dawkins is driving a drift car around a parking lot and, you know, whatever. And again, I'm enjoying all that. But fans around the league watching it, looking for the stuff that Hard Knocks was known for, I would think are going, this is like a PR video. Like, what am I doing?
Have they even had a fight?
So I just don't – I think it's on borrowed time. I don't know.
Have they even had one fight? Hard Knocks wants to be in Tennessee, where the quarterback is fighting guys, or in New England, where the coach is involved in scraps.
There was a scrap in the joint practice from last night.
That's right.
And I think McDermott was heard yelling for Alec Anderson to stay out of it. Like, don't get in there, Alec. Don't get in there.
Let him work it out.
Worry he's going to get in there and make it worse.
That guy has a trident.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, Chenault, I feel like Chenault, I think when camp started, I thought he was easy to even forget about that he was on the team. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. I want to go so far as to say I'd be surprised if he doesn't make it. But it won't surprise me if he does.
See what Sal says coming up at 5. Thanks for the call, Sal. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here at WGR.